Hello, and welcome back to the Absolute Bloody State of Things podcast. Haven't really had time to do anything. I think it's been about 3 weeks, so I've got exams at the moment. But I've just finished Dutch, so I've got a bit of time. So I thought I might as well talk about what's been going on. I mean, sports-wise, it's got the Cricket World Cup, had an incredible UFC event last weekend that I watched. I mean, nothing happening in football. Stanley Cup final happened. I couldn't actually watch Game 7 because, like I said, exams. But yeah, all in all, plenty of stuff to talk about. So I will touch on all that, but also talk about the final concert and album of Her Name Is Kala. I was lucky enough to actually go to that concert, and I've just been listening to their album Animal Choir non-stop since then, and it really, really is incredible. So I'll talk about all that coming up. Probably start off with Her Name Is Kala, then move on to sports. So yeah, here's a transition song. So that was A Moment of Clarity. By Her Name Is Kala from their final ever album, Animal Choir. So I was lucky enough, weirdly, thanks to the last podcast, to see their last ever concert. It was amazing. It was at Dunk Festival, which is a post rock, post metal, all that stuff festival in Arsène-Vernois in Belgium. But no, the concert was amazing. It was really, really, really something to behold. So I'm so glad I was able to go. I actually met the bands very, very briefly before. There's a mess up with actually getting there. I won't go into the details. It'll take a while, but I actually met the bands, and yeah, I mean, as nice as you could hope. Really, 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 really nice people, and obviously incredible musicians. So yeah, it's weird that they are over. All that stuff's done. It's strange because I've listened to the music for a while now. And I have loved it for a while as well. I've got very, very clear memories of periods of my life when I've been listening to them a lot. Some of them have been difficult and made easier by the music. Some of them have been good and improved by the music. It's been with me for a lot for a long time. I mean, I genuinely do think that Condor and River is the best song ever written. I certainly haven't found better, and I've been looking for a while now. But yeah. So if you're looking for a sort of final send off or a tribute to them, absolutely listen to their stuff. It's great. But no, they were been one of my favorite bands, definitely top three for a long time. I have never found a band that can transmit emotions better than they can. They really do make you feel what I assume they were feeling when they wrote it. It's incredible. The lyrics are beautiful and poetic. That is definitely not lost in this album. It's brilliant. It really, really is. So the one comment I have about the concert, obviously not negative. It was just an interesting change of pace because obviously they didn't have any brass instruments on there. So they had to lose the cornet. I think it is a cornet from Condor and River, for example. Which just adds a new sort of, just adds different dimensions to the song because they needed more reliance on the violin. It worked. It was very interesting, just to hear the difference from the studio version, which obviously I've heard so much of over the years. So it was nice. But no, amazing concert. Just going quickly into the album, they try some new stuff, which is lovely. For example, A Modern Vesper, brilliant song. It starts off pretty well, relatively normal. I think it's cello playing, but they change things up slightly. I think about like the 50-second mark, it goes like 80s, 90s German disco almost, which, I can appreciate, right? It sounds great. It was just very unexpected. But no, it was great. It was great to hear. It really was. I love the bands. I've loved them for years. I'm probably gonna keep loving them for many years to come. It's a shame they're not making music anymore, but I'm much but in yeah, as send-offs go, it can't get much better than this. Their final concert was like I said, was brilliant. It's surreal knowing that I saw their final like the final moments of them as a performing band. It was nice that their last ever song they played was The White in the Skin, because I've got very, very vivid memories of listening to that on a personal basis. So it's nice. I'm honoured really to have been able to see the last gig, and it sounds a bit hyperbolic and all that, but it really isn't. The band means a lot to me. Their music has been with me for a very, very long time, so it was an absolute pleasure and a privilege to be able to see their final ever concert. Yeah, just listen to them if you can. Especially the last album, it is glorious. The one thing I keep, so I've been listening to it for a week now. I can't figure out whether or not I prefer it to Quiet Lamb. It's definitely close. There aren't any songs that are better than Condor and River, because I think Condor and River might be the best song ever written. But there are some brilliant ones on this one too. Animal Choir has got such good songs. Such good songs. Moment of Clarity, I just played, is great, especially the trombone bit. Obviously, the singles they released beforehand, Kaleidoscoping, Dead Rift, The Dead Rift, and Swan are very good. But I mean, I've listened to them more than I have the rest of the album, because they were released, I think Kaleidoscoping was released 2 years ago. Weird. But anyway, yeah, Bloodline might be my favorite song on the entire thing. Yeah. Right, sports, the Cricket World Cup's going on. I'm currently watching England versus the West Indies. Which is nice. I think it's at Southampton, yeah. Anyway, we're looking good. Already got a wicket at 20 for 1 with a run rate of 3 after six overs and four extra balls. Make that 5. But yeah, Chris Gayle's doing well. Hope is not doing well. I should mention this is just after Chris Gayle was almost caught by Wood. Probably should have been caught by Mark Wood. It was. He did well to get there. Did well to get his hands on it. But then, as he fell, I don't know. His hand, one hand, rolled over the other and basically pushed the ball out of his hands for some reason. I don't know. It was weird. But anyway, Wokes is looking incredible. He's got an economy of under one and a wicket over what is now four overs. Almost got a second there. Yeah, we've looked good all tournament. I'm pretty sure that we could win it. I think the main candidates to win it all right now are England, India, New Zealand. Looked really good. And Australia. But yeah, England are in with a shot, without a doubt. Currently ranked number one in the world. The attack is without a doubt the strongest attack in the entire tournament, and I will not be fielding any comments on that. We're just looking very, very, very solid. Even the game we lost, with what would have been a world record chase, we actually came very, very close and looked like we could have done it. It was never, it never, it, nothing has seemed impossible for us, even if it's been close, which is incredible, really. And it's great to think about. And all in all, it's very positive stuff. I think we could win it. My guess is that we will win it. I won't be able to find out for 2 weeks because I'll be in China for the semi-finals and the final without any way of watching the Cricket World Cup or contacting the outside world, really. So that's gonna be fun. Hey, might be a nice surprise when I get back, though. Anyway, yeah. But the Cricket World Cup's been really fun. The games that have been played, when it's not been called off due to rain or anything like that, have been great to watch. West Indies are so much fun to watch when they bowl. Really, really are. The games I'm looking forward to most that are coming up, well, All England games and India Pakistan for obvious socio-political reasons, but yeah, it could always be fun. But yeah, no, West Indies are a really, really, really good team to watch. Them and Bangladesh have been the two teams I've enjoyed watching the most apart from England because of just how the Windies bowl and how Chris Gayle hits is brilliant. And then Bangladesh have always overachieved, and they've been overachieving in interesting, fun ways. Oh, hang on. Nah, it drops. Chris Gayle almost got caught, but no. Anyway, yeah. It's been a great tournament, actually. Great advert for cricket when it's been played, and also great advert for British weather when it's rained, which is way too much. I think it's five games that have been called off due to rain delay, which is atrocious, really. But what can you do? Either way, things are looking good going through to it. One fun thing is that I'm having to watch it on Yupp TV, which is this Hindi, English language, I think, actually, but English language and Hindi. I think it does both. Indian TV channel, I think it is. Either way, we get all sorts of adverts for this thing called God TV. These weird TV shows. I think Bollywood things are in there. It's really strange. The commentary is in English though, which is nice. Yeah, that's just fun. It changes things up a bit, which is lovely. We also they are very, very
centered around the Indian team. So I'm getting adverts with every single replay. I'm getting an advert for India's next game, which I think is tomorrow, maybe even on Sunday. So they are really getting some publicity behind the team, which, to be fair, with when you've still got Dhoni playing, and then you've also got people like Virat Kohli, who is already one of the best batsmen of this generation. It's good to see. Either way, that will probably be it for the Cricket World Cup in terms of what I have to say about it, because there have been some good moments, but I don't follow cricket that closely to be able to comment on them beyond saying I'm enjoying it and talking about some of the things I like. I mean, obviously, England's attack is incredible to watch. Jofra Archer's been bowling well. I mean, obviously, the hitting's just brilliant all around, all the time. You've got Jos Buttler, Jason Roy, Joe Root. You've got people just hitting centuries for fun, even in chases. It's brilliant, really. That's my comments on the Cricket World Cup. I will now probably talk about MMA for a while, which is nice. Yeah, sorry, I would have played a song, but I just found that sort of 80s, 90s porn music transition hilarious, so I'll put that in. Hope you enjoyed that meaty bass riff. Oh, yes. Anyway, MMA, bloody hell, what a card. So just got over with that. The whole lead-up was pretty bad. Blagoy Ivanov versus Tuivasa. I'm not really going to really talk about the main card. Ivanov versus Tuivasa was pretty dull. I'm not going to lie, it was. It shows the issue with Tuivasa. I mean, he talks about how terrible he felt and how motivated he was to do better after that Junior dos Santos loss. Which I get. I mean, obviously, can't be fun. Apparently, he watched a replay of the fight every night before going to bed during fight camp as a way of motivating himself to I never want to feel like that again. But his cardio is still terrible, which is unsurprising. I mean, look at him. Look at all of the heavyweights in that division. I mean, having cardio in that division is. It's ridiculous. It's like having one punch knockout power in the flyweight division. It just doesn't happen. But he gassed out pretty quickly. He had a couple of good moments, but I'd have to think Ivanov won. It was a good decision in the end. Also, just quite a dull fight, really. It's well, what can you say? It just wasn't that interesting to watch. What can you do? Anyway, I have the impression that I'm actually missing a fight. There's one I should be talking about that I'm not. But if I can't remember it, let's be honest, probably doesn't really merit discussion. There you go. Tony Ferguson versus Donald Cerrone was amazing. Right. Obviously, controversial end. It's not how you want to see it end, but I don't even know if I would want to see that third round, because obviously I want to see it as a fan of MMA and just have that primal sort of blood sport, just bleed meme guy kind of attitude to it all, because it was a absolute slugfest, and just that the cowboy's face was messed up, really. But in another way, I mean, like, he's a dad now as well. He's a good point in his career, but I don't think he's gonna challenge for any titles. He's good, but he's just not elite anymore, I don't think. I'm glad the third round didn't happen in a way. Obviously, I would want to have seen it, but Cerrone was getting messed up. I mean, that eye was a horror show, and I know he blew his nose, and you should never blow your nose and all that, but it was an orbital fracture. We found out later he was taken to the hospital with an orbital fracture. That's bad, and it looked bad, and there was, I think he was bleeding from the nose, because, I mean, he had a broken nose and an orbital fracture, and still wanted to go out for the third round. He blew his nose, his eye kind of blew up, and he then tried to reach into his own eye to pry it back open, or push the air back down. That was nasty. Ferguson looked really good. He looked a tiny bit slower than he tends to do in the first round, but it is a bit of a feeling out process, I guess. I think Cowboy might have actually won the first round. I think there's a case to be made for both. I mean, there weren't any knockdowns, there weren't any massive strikes, and I think volume wise, because it's Tony Ferguson, he got more hits in. But I think Cowboy looked good. He was kind of concise. Got some good kicks. Got some good kicks in on Ferguson in that first round. But dear God, that second he got pieced up. There was that. I can't remember if it was the first or second round, but there was that incredible sequence where Ferguson went for a jab, missed it, then ducked down to avoid the, I think it was a hook from Ferguson, from Cerrone, but then instead of pulling back or retreating out of the potential clinch or anything, he just turned it into a spinning elbow. So I think then that might have even been what caused the orbital fracture. That was pretty impressive to watch. Ferguson didn't miss a beat, really. It was very, very good performance from him. If Ferguson does not get a title shot next, I don't think the UFC should even rank fighters anymore, because that just keeping that image up would be an absolute sham. He has done so much. Is that a 12 fight winning streak now? I mean, the stats are someone posted online. Someone has the last time that Tony Ferguson lost, Henry Cejudo, the now dual weight world champion, hadn't had a single pro MMA fight. Bear in mind, Cejudo is not undefeated. And also, women didn't fight in the UFC. That's insane. He hasn't lost a fight since then. He has been beating top-level guys, right? Cerrone, he had a lot of momentum behind him. Doesn't necessarily make him the best fighter. But still, I mean, Pettis, Barboza, Kevin Lee, he has got some impressive names on his record, and not giving him a title shot is a travesty, especially taking into account the fact that he was the interim champion. That says it all, really. He was the interim champion, in line for a fight with Khabib, then loses the fight with Khabib due to a freak injury, no one's fault. He trips over a cable and blew out his knee, right? Came back in record time, and then insult to injury, in a very literal sense. He then fought on the same card as a Khabib title fight with the returning Conor McGregor. He fought an amazing bout with Anthony Pettis on that. That's got to be rough for a guy. Anyway, back to the Cerrone fight though. There was controversy with how it ended. There was the strike after the bell. You never like to see it. It landed on the nose, but the nose was already broken. It did not fracture the orbital bone. It was not the reason the fight was stopped. And I think the most important thing, I think John McCarthy came out to say this, a couple of other people have said it, the bell is not a signal to stop. Is not a signal to stop the fight. If a fighter hears the bell, obviously common courtesy dictates that he stops fighting, but the bell has no authority over the fighter. The bell is just a signal to the referee. If the referee hears the bell, he needs to stop the fighters. The bell doesn't stop the fighters, the referee stops the fighters. Dan Rigliotta did not stop the fighters before that punch was thrown. He was relatively far out. He gave them the benefit of the doubt. He said, all right, if they hear the bell, all right, they'll stop. They didn't. But the question shouldn't be, did the illegal strike end the fight? In a way, you could almost ask, was it an illegal strike? It happened after the bell, yes, but it didn't happen after the referee stopped the fight. I don't think you heard stop or saw any movement from Murigliotta to stop the fight before that strike was thrown. Either way, Ferguson apologised. He was dejected. He did not look pleased with his win. He didn't look happy with how things had turned out. I mean, obviously no one's happy to win in such controversial fashion, unless, I don't know, you're Usman Palhares or some other wanker. But he was respectful. He apologised to the crowd, above all. Apologised to Cowboy, which is very good. He mentioned the fact that he'd be fine to run it back. Now, firstly, terrible idea for Cowboy. He'd die. Just, I don't want to see a fan favourite and an all-round nice guy go through that again. I want to see Conor McGregor get fed to Ferguson. Anyway, yeah. Don't run it back. He shouldn't have said that, though, because now Dana has an excuse. He's like, oh, well, Tony Ferguson wants to run it back. He has another reason to not give Tony Ferguson that goddamn title shot. No, I don't think there is a person in the UFC right now who deserves a title shot more than Tony Ferguson. I don't think there's been a person who's never got a title shot in the history of the UFC who has deserved it as much as Tony Ferguson. His win streak is incredible. The stuff he is doing in the octagon is stuff you don't really see. He basically never uses his hands, it's just elbows. I mean, I think everyone's been posting that, I don't know what they're calling it, like the wall, the hall of pain or whatever, the wall of meat, whatever you want to call it. Just the faces of all his opponents. It's nasty to look at. I mean, RDA was bust up, Kevin Lee's face was swollen. I mean, Edson Barboza. I mean, I haven't seen him look like I haven't seen him look like that since. Even in the Khabib fight, he was bruised, battered, and looked like he didn't want to be there. But he wasn't bleeding as much as he was with Ferguson. Ferguson's a scary man. He is a scary, scary man. He is an incredible fighter, and if we don't see him, he's also 35 years old. I think he might even be 36. Definitely getting up there age-wise. We don't know how much longer he has left in this prime, and if we don't get to see a prime Ferguson fight for a title, it doesn't matter if he wins it. Honestly, just give him the chance. Just give him the chance to win it. Because if you fight for a title, and you don't win it, everyone will say, "Well, that's a shame. He might be one of the best fighters to never hold a belt." You've got Uriah Faber, never held a belt, never held a belt. You've got a lot of great fighters, and Uriah Faber, who never held a belt, and that's fine. But that's sort of their limit. If they fight, even just once, for a belt, and they don't win it, at least you can say they had the chance to do it. At the end of the day, it does in some case, most cases, come down to their own abilities, that they didn't win the reason Uriah Faber was never a champion was because he wasn't quite good enough. He was always very, very good, but he was never quite good enough to win a belt in the UFC. That's just how it is. It's the depressing reality. Everyone uses the term, everyone hates the term. There are levels to this thing. Realistically, if you're not good enough to win a champ, if you're not good enough to win a title, you're not going to win a title. You're not just not going to win that belt. You're not going to have gold on your waist, and that is the depressing reality of the sport. And in the same way, that's the depressing reality of most sports. MMA is not a sport of chance. It almost always boils down to whoever was better prepared, whoever has more skills, is the winner. And obviously, there's always a puncher's chance, right? But there's a reason you didn't see Jessica Rai landing any strikes on Valentina Shevchenko, and I'll get to that. There's a reason that Henry Cejudo is so good. He's so good and looks so good in the second and third round. That's just how that goes. Anyway. But that's why it would be so depressing to not give Ferguson the chance to fight for a title. He's won an interim belt, but he was then stripped of that interim belt. That's a joke, an absolute joke. I get that he could have been. I understand why he was stripped of the belt. That's understandable, right? He was injured. He couldn't defend it. Fine, but then he obviously deserves the chance to then fight for the actual belt, or at least another. No, not another interim. We've had enough interim belts. He has earned the shot. And I know I'm saying it. What I'm saying, everyone has said before. Everyone apart from Dana White thinks that Tony Ferguson deserves a title shot. I think even Dana White knows he does. He's just not that marketable a fighter to casual fans, I think. And that's a fucker. It really is. He needs that shot. It would be horrible to see a fighter as good as Tony Ferguson lose his fighting prime, never fighting for a title, through no fault of his own. People get put up against Tony Ferguson, people lose to Tony Ferguson, people leave that cage, in some cases with shattered hands, faces battered and bruised, either getting choked out, knocked out, or just beaten down for 3 to 5 rounds. He does what he needs to do. He has not put a foot wrong in the cage in terms of getting a title shot. It's just for some reason, I don't know who he pissed off. I don't know if it's just because he isn't that marketable to casual fans. I don't know what it is, but he's not getting the title shot he deserves. And people are getting annoyed about it. People have been voicing the fact that they think this is unfair I think a couple of years now. But not they just know the UFC notices. There's no way they haven't. There's all those amusing coy tweets that they post out going, "Oh, maybe he'll get a title shot next." Well, fucking make it then, make the fight. That's what everybody wants to see. It's ridiculous, but no, I actually do think that Tony Ferguson will retire without getting a title shot. I think that is the depressing reality of things, because Khabib wants to fight him, but there is a chance that Khabib does get that GSP fight, and if Khabib gets that GSP fight, he'll take that over Ferguson, and I get that. Massive payday. He's been his childhood hero. He's the person he's always wanted to fight. And as champion, he's 50-0 in the sport. Well, he's no, he's not quite. Hang on, I've gotten this record. Oh my God, sorry, I'm like I said, exam stress. I am shattered. But either way, I think he wants. Someone said that he's I think it was Abdelaziz said that Khabib's looking for three or four more fights, including a fight with GSP and then retirement. But Khabib has publicly said he wants to, he would rather have the fight with Tony than a rematch with McGregor. I think that's how he phrased it, actually, which is brilliant and really, really good to hear from the actual champion, the person who has more power to make that happen. But it is also Ali Abdelaziz, right? That slimy, slimy guy is good at his job. And if he wants a fight and he thinks a fight is going to make him money, that's the fight that gets made. He is, by all accounts, an absolute scumbag. But he's an efficient scumbag. Anyway, that's what I'm going to say about that. I don't think we'll ever see Tony Ferguson fight for anything more than an interim belt, which is sad. But moving on, Shevchenko versus I. Results I expected, not the way I expected, right? Obviously, everyone knew Shevchenko was going to win. Anyone giving Jessica Rae a chance was out of their mind. And I'm not going back on this, right? I tweeted out before the fight started, this is going to be an absolute, this is going to be technical mastery versus a person who uses an overhand right. And that was all it was. Jessica Rae had, I think her most impressive feat was surviving on the ground for the entire first round. She like threw a couple of punches, got I think one or two massive kicks to the body from Shevchenko. Then I was taken down, just held there with barely enough action to keep the referee from standing them up. It was not a fun first round. It's a Valentina Shevchenko fight. Yeah. But anyway, a couple of strikes landed. I think she went for a Kimura at the end of the round that I got out of, which is good. Anyway, second round. Starting off with a bit more boxing, two or three massive kicks to the body again. I clearly not enjoying them. Leg comes up for another kick. I drops her hands and receives one of the nastiest head kick knockouts we have ever seen. She got crow copped, properly crow copped. Right, it was horrible to see. So she just stood there for a second, like slumped over, but still standing. Then just collapsed backwards and her head smashed against the canvas. I mean, it was nasty. I mean, there were multiple people online who were talking about how they were there in the stadium and they thought she died. It was one of the nastiest knockouts since that Uriah Hall spinning heel kick. It is that level of nasty to see, that level of the people who were close enough to the fighters, they knew it was bad. I mean, you could see the referee's face. He was not the same. He was ashen. That's a good word. He was ashen. It was a hell of a kick and a hell of a performance from Valentina Shevchenko. Absolutely deserves to be champion. I mean, I don't know who she's going to fight next, but it was hard to watch. Anyway, also, since this going round, I personally have no interest in seeing Nunez versus Shevchenko 3. I just don't care. Nunez won twice, even if the second result was a bit was a close decision. Nunez is the better fighter, and I don't think Shevchenko will necessarily want that fight. I think she's just happy to be a GSP or a Prime Anderson Silva, just completely ruling over the division. Occasionally getting a couple of people who look like they could beat her. Not happening. Realistically, her legacy will be more impressive if she just goes on a Ronda Rousey style, just miles ahead of the competition win streak for a bit, but without the apparition of her, without having her Holly Holm or her, well, her Amanda Nunes was Amanda Nunes, because Nunes is just a brilliant fighter and I think the greatest female MMA fighter of all time, I'd say, and also very funny on Twitter, which is nice. But yeah, just I don't think Valentina will realistically be challenged. I think she's already in her 30s now. Maybe like 29, 30, I think. Maybe 32 even. She's got good few years of her prime left, but I don't think she's going to spend them looking for the biggest fights. I think she's going to spend them looking for records, looking for title defenses. Because let's be honest, I can't think of anyone apart from Amanda Nunes who will actually challenge her at the moment. I mean, you've got a couple of good up-and-comers, but they won't be focusing on Shevchenko. They'll be focused on Nunez. I mean, Tatiana Suarez, for example. She'll be focused on Jessica Andrade. All it's just
Yeah, I think the way the divisions are done, all the good up and coming fighters will be fighting for will be fighting against people like Namajunas, Andrade, Nunes, and Tatiana Suarez in a couple of years, I think. She's looking good. She, I mean, she'd lose to Andrade in a second, yeah. But still, that's just how it is. I think we're going to see Shevchenko at the top of that division for a very, very long time because I don't think there's anyone who can challenge her. That's just how good she is. I mean, a couple of people, including myself, made this joke. I would honestly want to see Valentina Shevchenko versus Henry Cejudo. That would be an incredible fight. See if we can make it quadruple C. And that seamless transition brings us to Cejudo versus Marais. My God, what a fight! It was lovely, absolutely lovely fight. I thought Marais had it. I think everyone thought Marais had it after that first round. He was battering Cejudo, but Cejudo didn't go down. I mean, seeing his ankle, that's impressive. But I'll get to that later. Cejudo goes back to his corner, gets an honest assessment from them, basically just says, "All right, I'll step it up." Comes out and gives one of the most impressive title performances I have seen in a long, 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 long time. Honestly, it was incredible to watch. He realized he was getting outstruck and beaten on the feet, so he just comes out and throws five strikes for every one that gets thrown by Marais. It was very, very, very impressive to watch. I mean, he was getting body shots, leg kicks. I mean, so many head strikes. Marais, right? Veteran. He's been around for a while. He's got a lot of pro fights. I don't know how he did this, but somehow he was just able to gas Marais out. I don't think Marais was expecting that at all. I think Marais was thinking it was going to be a striker versus grappler thing. He was going to avoid the takedowns, land his power shots, get a second, third round knockout. A lot of people saw it going that way. After that first round, I saw it going that way, especially when Cejudo missed that takedown. But then Cejudo just comes out in the second round and puts on an incredible striking display. So definitely surprises Marais. Marais is completely gassed by the end of that second round. I think Cejudo finishes that one on the ground. Then third round, Cejudo comes out and just batters him even more. Gets a takedown, batters him, and then by the end of it, good stoppage. I think it was Mark Goddard, the ref. Oh, sorry, Bairstow just gets a catch, and Gail is out for 36 or 40 balls. 54 for two, looking good. Yeah, it was. But back to the Marais fight. He got outclassed. It's not like Marais was exposed for being one dimensional. It's not like everyone's going out saying, "Oof, tell you what, Marais isn't actually that good." I think he was a bit of a hype job. Not at all. Marais is brilliant. Henry Cejudo is just better. You can't really say fairer than that, because he is very, very. I mean, not very. He's incredible. He's an absolutely incredible fighter. Just the adjustments he was able to make. I think this was the fight he needed. This was the fight he needed to actually be taken seriously. Because the DJ fight was close. And a lot of people say, a lot of people score it one way, a lot of people score it the other. It was I mean, he won a split decision, right? It was a very, very dominant champion. And he beat him, but he didn't beat him convincingly. Because a lot of people don't even think it was a win. Then he beat TJ Dillashaw. If he'd done that at bantamweight, that would be impressive. And as it happened, I think it still was impressive. Let's not forget, this is still TJ Dillashaw, right? Very, very good fighter. However, Dillashaw moves down. I think it was for Dillashaw's pride, really. He framed himself as well, wanting to kill the flyweights. That's just a marketing ploy, let's be honest. But anyway, Dillashaw looks horrible. I mean, it's hard to look at. He's just skin and bones. I am a really, really skinny person. I'm medically underweight. I do I, For some reason, I can't put on weight. It doesn't matter if I work out, if I eat, no matter what happens, I am painfully underweight. I look like Roy Nelson compared to flyweight TJ Dillashaw. It was awful, absolutely awful. He genuinely looked like patient zero of some weird flesh-eating parasite. Nasty stuff. Anyway, enough about that. So he gets knocked out. He was going for a single leg. He got knocked out, right? Good stoppage. But he just looks terrible. I think that's always the thing with early knockouts. You can't prove dominance with an early knockout. You can prove power with an early knockout. You can prove good striking technique with an early knockout. But you can't say
you don't look at an early knockout and go, what an incredible performance. That's why, for example, that's why Aldo deserved a rematch against McGregor. He got knocked out in 8 seconds. That doesn't say anything about either of their abilities. All it says was Aldo left his head up because he was looking to just murder McGregor after everything McGregor had said about his country, and McGregor can time a good counter, which he can. McGregor can time a very good counter, and that's how he did that. 13 seconds, I think it was. Yeah. Oh, hang on. They're calling LBW. I don't know if they're going to go for a review. Anyway, sorry. Yeah. So, well, they're going for a review. But yeah, Connor got a 13-second victory. It doesn't say anything about either of their abilities, really. But anyway, the Moraes victory was incredible. Henry Cejudo is the real deal, without any doubt. He smashed Moraes. But he did it in extremely impressive fashion because of the first round. That's what made it even more impressive. And then, my God, the stuff that came out about his ankle afterwards, he was being wheeled to and from the press conference because of how messed up his ankle was. I don't know if it was broken or whatever, but it was nasty. I mean, hard to look at, actually. The photos, it was really, really ugly. Yeah, I think that will pretty much do it for this episode. I don't really have much else to say in terms of who I want to see Cejudo fight next. Anyone, I'll watch it. Not because of the whole King of Cringe gimmick he's doing. It's a character, let's be honest. Not because of any of that. He's fun to watch. He's an exciting fighter. Even if he does do a terrible post-fight press conference and interview. Seriously, the whole Triple C thing, that was clearly pre-prepared. It was awful. But yeah. It's... Oh, and Shy Hope has been bowled for LBW. My word. Nice. But yeah. And on that note of Shy Hope being bowled to make it 55-3 in the Cricket World Cup, that will conclude this MMA section of the episode and also this episode overall. I may put the porn transition sound in again because I found it really funny. I've been Zonda Zekicevsky. This has been the absolute bloody state of things. I'm trying to add more charisma to my voice when I speak. Bye!